And okay, so finally, I'm going to talk about a principal components analysis applied to the CASE megasecond data. Okay. It's not on? Oh, okay. Is that better? Okay. All right. So we are all know and love this remnant CASE, and so this is the very first Chandra image of it, 5,000 seconds. And of course, Hughes et al. Were able to use just the 5,000 second image to determine some properties of the remnant. And then, of course, there were the 50,000 second images, and there is a whole bunch of papers that came out of this data set. I've only listed a few here, there are several others. And so there's a lot that we can learn from even just these smaller data sets on CASE. So then we come to the million second data set. And Lamy and Huang have pointed out that this is deep enough so that we can extract spectra with sufficient signal to noise for spectral fitting from each pixel of the ASUS CCD. Now, I don't know about you, but as a graduate student, and so somebody who might actually have to do that spectral fitting, it's a little bit overwhelming. And so we want to look and see if we can find some help to get a handle on the rich data set. So one thing we can use is this principal component analysis. And it's a statistical technique that is often used to reduce the dimensionality of a data set. It's relatively unbiased way for identifying spectral variations in a statistically quantifiable way. So, what is a PCA, principal component analysis? Well, suppose you have a set of data. So I'm representing the data by these green circles here. And you can represent them in terms of counts, say, in two different spectral channels, spectral channel 1 and spectral channel 2. So you can think of your data as vectors in a parameter space and plot them in this parameter space. Well, what the PCA will do is find new variables or new axes that maximize the variance of your data. So this axis U I've drawn as, say, the first principal component that maximizes the variance of your data. Then the subsequent principal components will be orthogonal to each other, and so the second one here would be along this direction, B. So what you're really finding is that U is just a linear combination of your old variables, your old spectral channels. And it turns out that these variables or these axes are just eigenvectors of some form of your data matrix. So how do we apply PCA to supernova remnants? Well, our data will be the spectra from many different spatial regions within a single supernova remnant. So this is the broadband image of the megasecond, Chandra megasecond data. And we divide that remnant into many square regions. And so all these little, what looks black here, these are actually individual square regions. Each of them has at least 1,000 counts. And we find that we can get regions from about half arc second square to about 4 arc second square. And this results in 125,181 regions in this remnant. So now that we've divided up the regions spatially, we also will do spectral binning. So what I've got here is the integrated spectrum of CASE. And just throw in some of the salient features here, the silicon line, sulfur, argon, et cetera. And what I want to do is isolate certain features, say, for example, silicon helium-like lines, and the iron K continuum here. And then each region spectrum will be binned in this particular way. So I've got 17 broad spectral channels here. I keep them broad because I don't want to have to worry so much about detector effects or gain shift at this point in time. So now we extract the spectra from each of those 125,000 regions, bin each of those spectra into these 17 broad channels, and run that through the principal component analysis. So what do we get out? Okay, so the first principal component here, there are a number of ways to look at the output of a PCA. Up here, I've plotted a representation of the first principal component in terms of your original 17 energy bins. So all this is showing is basically what linear combination of your original 17 channels gives you this first principal component. And what you see here is that channels that are far from the zero line, say out here and then down here, contribute quite a lot to this component, whereas channels that are close to the zero line contribute very little. And so what this is showing is that the first variation is picking out spectra with sort of low versus high energy flux ratios. And this could be featureless versus lines, or it could be absorbed versus unabsorbed. Another way to look at the output of the PCA is to take each of those regions' spectra and project them onto this new axis, because again, this is just a vector space, so it's just linear algebra, basically. And when we do that, those projected values we can represent in a spatial map. So that's what I've got here. Dark regions have one particular value on an extreme part of the PC1 dimension, and then lighter regions here have an opposite value. So the light regions and the dark regions are spectrally very different along this particular dimension. And we can see that, so now that we have a map, a spatial map, we can extract spectra from these particular regions. And so the red spectrum comes from a light region in the map, and the green spectrum comes from a dark region. And you can see if you compare the ratio of the flux at, say, 1 keV to the flux at, say, 5 keV, you can see that you have a much higher ratio in the red spectrum than you do in the green spectrum. So the next principal component shows up very clearly as a silicon versus iron L. So this is a silicon and this is iron L region here. And clearly reveals the jets here, or whatever these features are, and this silicon arc here that is very familiar. And then over here, you've got the dark regions that are iron rich. And again, we can extract spectra. And so it bears out what we expected, that the lighter regions are silicon rich in this blue spectrum, and then the dark regions are iron rich in this purple spectrum here. Another thing to do is until now I've just shown one particular dimension, the PC1, then PC2. We can actually project the spectra into the PC12 plane. So along the horizontal axis I have PC1 values, and perpendicular is to that is PC2. And so you can see how the spectra fall in these in both dimensions. And for example, when you do this, you can break some degeneracy. So say these three, the aqua, the pink, and the blue spectra, all have about the same PC2 value, but they're separated in PC1 space. And you can tell that because the aqua spectrum looks much more absorbed, and so it's the low energy flux is not as significant compared to the higher energy flux as it is in the blue spectrum. Okay, so those first two PCs were relatively familiar in the map. These next two are a little more complicated in terms of understanding them. In fact, I don't understand them yet. It looks like this one is showing some difference in the perhaps different states of iron L. This bin here, just below 2 keV, and then the very lowest energy bins. And these show up here in this map. It could be, right, yeah, it could, right here, yeah, it could be. Actually, I've got a spectrum from that. So this, the red spectrum is from this little part right over here. So, yeah, this could be oxygen. I haven't done any fits or anything to these yet, so I don't really know. but it's definitely it's showing a different kind of morphology than you see in other perspectives of CAFE. PC4 seems to be showing something going on with the iron K here in this spin, and maybe contrasting with this could be magnesium and it could be iron L as well. And again, you see a different kind of morphology here. And so it could be possibly different ionization states of iron. Again, we can look at the PC3-4 plane and see that we can break some degeneracy. So here the aqua, the green, and the blue spectra all have relatively the same shape. And in fact, they show up with about the same PC3 value. PC3 value, but then they're separated in PC4 space. And again, that's because here the blue spectrum has a relatively higher flux in its iron K compared to the iron L bands out here. So with PC5, we keep going, and it's showing quite a bit of signal out here in the very highest energy bin, and that's showing up all around the edges of the remnant where I have regions that have more background in them. So it's probably saying something that's just it's saying, okay, well, there's a lot of background here. So that's not so interesting. PC6, on the other hand, seems to be quite a bit more interesting. Because what this is showing is a difference between, this is just below 2 keV is the silicon helium-like line, and just above is a hydrogen-like, or Lyman alpha line. And we can see that from the spectra. So if you look here at this dark region here, that's the red spectrum, very strong helium-like. And the green spectrum is from a bright region in PC in the map, which shows a very strong hydrogen-like line. The hydrogen-like line seems to be strong, and there are only a few isolated spots where you've got this bright PC6 area, whereas the dark areas seem to trace out maybe this silicon arc over here and come up over here, and much more spread throughout. So I could keep going and keep showing you more and more PCs, but at some point we have to stop and say, well, what does this mean, or what do we do with them? So the PCs are helpful in that they can help to organize spectral classes, and they provide spatial information of the different spectra and indicate regions of potential interest that maybe weren't realized before. However, they're complicated. There's not really a simple interpretation, a single interpretation for most of these, except maybe PC6 seems to be this helium-like versus hydrogen-like silicon. And so again, I'm just reiterating the nearly equal flux from the helium-like to hydrogen-like lines versus a much stronger helium-like for the dark PC6 regions. So what can we do with this? Well, since the main variation is in the silicon, we want to try to relate this to the thermodynamic state of the silicon-rich ejecta. The dark regions seem to trace out maybe the inner edge of this silicon-rich zone. So on the left panel, this is an image in the silicon band, and on the right is the PC6 image. And so I've got the contours of this dark PC6 image over here. And it seems to maybe trace out the inner edge of that silicon arc. So perhaps that's an indication of material that's close to the reverse shock. Okay, so what about the brighter PC6 knots? Well, Lamming and Huang in 2003 had done a study of radial knots in CAFE in this eastern portion here. And they fit for the temperature and ionization age and compared those values to models of a knot thermodynamic evolution, which depends on the ejecta density profile power law index. So what they found, and Martin talked about this on Tuesday, these curves are for their models and represent different power law indices, and then the blue diamonds are their fitted values from the spectra. And they find that they agree mainly with n equals 9. And if we take what we see from PC6, the fact that we have a very high flux in the helium-like to hydrogen-like of approximately ratio of about 1, that's this red curve here. We can map out what parameters in this temperature versus ionization age plot would allow that flux ratio to be seen. And so that's occurring way up here. In the for the green line, this is a helium-like to hydrogen-like ratio of 5, which is seems to be much more ubiquitous in CASA and falls right in this range of the different models. So silicon really seems to be able to probe these models fairly well. So we can use PC6 to choose a similar series of radial knots. So this is Silicon Valley in CASA here, the eastern portion. On the left is the broadband image. On the right is the PC6 image. Up here is the jet, and this is the silicon arc sort of is over here. And I chose a series of knots that go from a dark PC6 region in the interior out through a very bright PC6 region and then beyond. And so we follow Lamy and Huang and do spectral fits. So these are from a light and a dark region. We assume a single ionization time scale with an oxygen continuum. But you notice that the iron L is not fit all that well, and the iron K is certainly not fit very well. So because we're really interested in silicon, we decided to look at the band, restrict our spectral band from just silicon through the continuum here and ignore iron. Iron is in the spectrum is likely due to projection, and so we can treat it as a separate component, or we will treat it as a separate component here and ignore it in these fits. So we get our temperature from the continuum and the ionization state from the lines. I'm just about done. And what we find is we find knots with a higher ionization age than were previously found. So these knots down here at the very bottom are from the most outer edge that we extracted spectra for. And then you go radially inward around following the blue line into the interior with the darkest PC6 region over here. So, and this point way out here is the very brightest PC6 region. So this seems to follow this n equals 7 curve fairly well, which was kind of surprising. I don't want to read too much into it, but it is an indication that there's something there. I also extracted a few spectra from some of those other very bright PC6 regions, and they're plotted on these with these triangles here. And you can see that they fall sort of right along this line of a helium-like to hydrogen-like flux ratio of about 1. And the interesting thing is that the PC6 really gives us a census of that ratio. So we don't see any, if there were, say, a hydrogen-like line that were somehow brighter than the helium-like, it would probably show up in this area of parameter space, and we don't see that in PC6. Math. So we're still digesting these results, and PC6 shows this high versus low silicon ionization state with only a few isolated areas with nearly equal helium-like and hydrogen-like fluxes. And so one question is, well, why is that, and why don't we see these hydrogen-like fluxes stronger than the helium-like? It's also possible that there's, in this direction towards the jet, the PC6 map seems to show it's a little bit brighter than the average. So it's possible that there's maybe a higher ionization state in this direction. So we want to analyze another series of spectral knots here. So the point of all this is that the PCA gives a new perspective on this very rich data set, and hopefully we can use it to glean more information about this complex object. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jessica. Questions?
When your group and our group have done this sort of analysis, you know, a few years back on other remnants, we typically characterize these things in terms of equivalent width maps, doing a very similar kind of special binning, mm-hmm. trying to isolate interesting lines and looking for variations in those to pick out places that look like they're interesting to look at for the special studies.
Right.
So I guess I didn't quite get what advantage you have in doing this kind of principal component analysis over versus doing that kind of analysis. What does this gain you?
Well, first of all, we don't have to worry so much with the equivalent width maps. You have to worry about continuum, subtracting the continuum properly. And sometimes, like in the iron L area, you don't really know the continuum so well. So we don't have to worry about that kind of effect. Also, we're choosing our energy bins. We're choosing these 17 different energy bins, and we're letting the PCA, the linear algebra, basically tell us which of these are really really stand out in terms of spectral variation. So we're not picking, you know, saying, well, let's make a map of the silicon line and see what happens, or of the calcium line or something like that. We're letting the math sort of do that for us. And so in that sense, it's a little bit more unbiased, I guess. It's a little bit less user involved in some sense.
When you examine two regions that are really different in brightness but right next door to one another, like that silicon region, mm-hmm. do you have to worry about contamination due to scattering along the line of sight? There's a fair amount of X-ray scattering along the line of sight, and with a high contrast between the two regions, does that affect your analysis?
You mean in the two regions that I showed at the end here?
Was the Silicon Valley or so?
Yeah.
Well, just a generic region.
Okay,
there or anywhere. I mean, there are really bright spots, and then there's adjacent dark spots or fainter spots.
Right. Well, I tried to pick regions that also seem to be correlate a little bit with the brightness. So here. So I tried to pick regions in the PC6 map that seem to run along sort of intensity spots, or stronger surface brightness spots in the broadband map, so that you could maybe argue that they were sort of isolated knots. But in terms of the, you're talking about the line of sight variation? Yeah, I mean, I haven't thought so much about how to incorporate a variation along the line of sight there.
Yes, while you have this up on the screen, one thing we should try and do, you have a nice series of knots going between, you know, further out in the ejector and further back. We could extrapolate further in and see exactly where you would predict the reverse shock is.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to be possible with a nice set of knots like this.
Going further.
You see how much further in you predict it is.
Mm-hmm.
And establish that and see if anyone else can pick that up in other wave bands.
Right.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
Again.